Welcome to Going Beyond Medicine with Elaine Grohman. Conversations with people who are working to make a difference in our world. Now here's your host for Going Beyond Medicine on Empower Radio, Elaine Grohman.
Good afternoon, everyone. This is Elaine Grohman on Empower Radio. And the show Going Beyond Medicine is really intended to help to broaden our concept of what we think of in the Western culture of medicine and really begin to look at what true medicine actually is. And today I'm absolutely honored to have Angela Ferguson on as a guest today. Angela is a traditional indigenous farmer who oversees the Anangan Nation farm crew and is responsible for the nation's multiple community gardens. She also works with an organization called Braiding the Sacred, which is a nonprofit network of Native farmers, faith keepers, seed keepers, and key allies who work to maintain seed diversity. And I'm really looking forward to this conversation. Welcome to the show, Angela.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you. And I also want to know that our let everyone know that Angela is going to be featured in a 4-part series on PBS, which is going to be airing beginning October 23rd, 2018, from 9 to 5 Eastern Standard Time. And if you would just check your own public radio stations listing in your area, wherever you happen to be. And the series is called Native America. So, Angela, please tell us about the work that you do as a farmer. And in particular, we're really interested in the importance of corn. And, you know, so many of us aren't quite as aware as our Native friends and allies are in that regard.
The importance. Okay, yeah, thank you. Well, my duties for the Anangan Nation is to create a collective of community members that are working together to grow food for the nation. And what we have been working on for the past 3 years is bringing back a lot of our, not only our traditional food, but a lot of our traditional farming methods. And so we've been going back to no-till gardening, using some of our ancient Iroquois methods of burning our fields and using all natural compost, basically the original form of organic farming.
Mm, yes.
And one of the main purposes of doing that is to be able to provide those foods directly to the people on the nation. So when the foods are ready to be harvested, we also deliver them to the community members, each individual house on the nation, and which also creates some time for visiting and updating the people on what's happening at the farm. So it's created a really good sense of community.
That is absolutely incredible. So, and you know what, I think, are you sharing beyond just with the Anangan Nation and the Iroquois? Are you sharing this knowledge, which is so important to everyone? I mean, is anyone able to learn about the importance and how to actually truly grow things in an organic way?
Yes, I do a lot of speaking engagement with our youth at different schools, not only at the Native school, but a lot of our Native people live in urban areas. And so I've done some presentations where I've been able to actually bring seeds for the children to take a look at and see the different varieties. A lot of people don't know that there are other colors of corn and different kinds of beans than what they regularly see in the grocery stores. So I do that with the younger children, and I also do it at the university level as well.
Oh, that's beautiful. I'm looking at the braidingthesacred.org website and the incredibly beautiful photograph that is on the page there that shows this beautiful panorama of colors of corn. I think that most people, you know, they see the corn that they might see in the grocery store, which is just uniformly colored a pale yellow often, or to a golden yellow. But this whole panorama of colors shows the diversity of the corn.
Yes, we've been very lucky to connect with many other nations in our Confederacy. There are 6 nations, which are 5 others besides the Onondaga. And through Braiding the Sacred, a lot of the indigenous corn growers, not only from our own Haudenosaunee Confederacy, but also outside. It's created a network of corn growers all across Turtle Island who are communicating and sharing seeds to bring back a lot of the varieties that may not necessarily have been forgotten about, but have been kind of reemerging and kind of increasing the seed stock on that for our future generations.
Yes, and I think Angela, just so that you know, since people across the globe literally can listen to this show, would you mind just clarifying for those who are not familiar with the term Turtle Island? You know, many people don't realize what that means. And also
Absolutely.
That and the Haudenosaunee versus the word Iroquois.
Okay, so Turtle Island is what we refer to as North America. And it's kind of amazing that that's the reference that's used in our creation story. We talk about our descending from the sky world, the Iroquois people. And as Sky Woman fell, she fell into the back of a turtle. And this is the place where our people have come from. And if you actually look at North America on a map, that's kind of what it looks like.
Yes.
So it's pretty interesting, you know, that our creation story kind of maps in with that view from the sky.
Yes.
And Haudenosaunee is a reference to what we call ourselves, which are the people of the Longhills. And Iroquois was a French word that was given to us when we encountered the French upon contact.
Yes, but not your own name for yourselves.
Correct. Our own name that we refer to ourselves are people of the Longhills.
Thank you. Thank you for clarifying that, because I think that it's so important for people to begin to understand, since the indigenous people have always been the keeper of this sacred information, and there's been so much that has been lost. So thank you for helping us to understand that. Can you please tell me, Angela, what does the term Corn Nations mean?
Well, to me, Corn Nation is not only the strength that builds our human bodies, but it is the strength that builds our nation. All of our indigenous cultures around the world, not only here in our own communities, but all the way around the world, all indigenous communities are based around food.
Yes.
And each race of human beings was gifted something by their own creator that was what they would call a spirit food. So some parts of the world that may be rice, in other parts of the world that may be corn, in some parts of the world that may be wheat, things like that. And so we call those foods like the basis of our, not only our diets, but the basis of our agriculture and the basis of our community.
Yes. And some of these corn varieties are literally, if I'm not mistaken, hundreds if not thousands of years old.
Oh, yes. Just like people have migrated around the world, so too has corn. And corn originated in Central America, and we all have more recently in modern times been coming to that realization and finding where the corn, you know, through trade routes and communication amongst indigenous people here, even between North, Central, and South America, the corn traveled along. It was used as a trade value also, because it was so powerful that people really, it wasn't really trade using as just currency. It was traded, gifted as something, as a gift of honor, something that was sacred.
Mm-hmm.
So when different tribes encountered one another, the human nature at that time, and even now to this day, was always to give the best of what you had. And a lot of times, corn was that particular item. So you can see how corn has traversed all across North and South America and all around the world. And even archaeologists are able to see the route that it had taken and how the health of the people when that particular food was entered into their agricultural system, the health of the people who ate that immensely improved and strengthened those people.
And so obviously that, you know, the impact of this corn is most people just think of something like what they might quote unquote call produce is not just a food substance. It's medicine, truly medicine. Correct?
Yes, I really, I have a very, not only a strong spiritual connection to the corn itself, but its essence as well, because it isn't just a food to us. It's actually who we are,
yes,
part of us. It's a relative. It has its own spirit that some people are even able to communicate with, and we feel that it is an honor and duty to care for this particular relative. So when we consider our food on a more spiritual level like that, mm-hmm, the care that goes into the farming and agriculture is not only medicine and food to eat, but it's medicine for you and that, you know, involved in that particular activity.
Mm. Can you explain what you mean by that, please?
Well, I've found that a lot of people who have come to work in the traditional gardens, and some of our youth, have really been profoundly impacted, including myself. It kind of changes you. Once you develop a connection to your food in that type of way, the care and everything that you're putting into it from you as a human being, that's what's actually the medicine that's going into the food.
Yes.
So then when other people eat that food, they're picking up on that energy that you've placed onto the food, mm-hmm, through your hands, your hard work, your tenderness.
Mm. You know, I had the beautiful opportunity to, in May of this year, to be at the Sea Temple that Grandmother Flor de Mayo cares for. And there was a beautiful gentleman there who was the overseer of it. And he gave us a beautiful talk about all of the different kinds of corn and was gracious enough to pass around some different ears of corn from various places on the planet. And I recall, thank you for saying what you just said, because I recall holding this, it almost looked like pearls. This beautiful, almost iridescent white corn looked like pearls to me. And it was just so incredibly beautiful. It just opened my senses in a whole different way, which was so totally unexpected, but so beautiful. So thank you for sharing what you just did, because I can appreciate it. I had that experience myself, and it was incredible. Absolutely incredible.
Great. Some people find it hard to believe that there are so many varieties, or they say, this isn't real, or, you know, it's funny.
Yeah. Yeah. And can you tell us what, I'm sure that you know, as a farmer and as someone who cares so intimately for the corn, that each one of these beautiful varieties, as I'm looking at the photo on your website, braidingthesacred.org, they look like jewels. The ones that in particular was drawing my eyes, the one that's so multicolored, and each one of those kernels has a different story to tell, even as they sit side by side on the same stalk or in the same cob, I guess. And it's this whole panorama of color.
Yeah, it's so amazing when you, during the harvest time, when you're opening up some of those different varieties of cobs, because it's like a surprise on each one. And when I take, different corns to the children for them to see at the school, they're like, wow. And they just get so excited. And they say, I didn't know. What is this one? And ooh, and it creates this curiosity, which is the beginning of building up our little farmers, you know, is that first curiosity. You know, planting our three sisters, which corn is the eldest sister, the first sister, but it's also in a relationship with its others. So by starting the conversation around corn, you open the door to the children getting to know the other sisters as well and their symbiotic relationship. So
can you explain
this? I feel like those are such gifts, all those different colors that kind of trigger our ancestral memory.
Yes, and of course, remember again also that this is a global broadcast. So if you could please help people understand what is the term three sisters represent And what are those three species of plants, and how is it that they relate to one another and support one another?
So our three sisters are the corn, beans, and squash. And so the duty of the corn, when you plant that corn, is it's standing straight up as it's reaching out towards the sky. And around it, we plant the second sister, which are the beans. And so most of our Iroquois or Haudenosaunee varieties of beans will twist up the spine of the corn stalk. So the corn actually supports the beans as the bean climbs up, but in a symbiotic relationship, the beans actually hold up the corn as well. So they're kind of like a support so that the corn doesn't tip over when it rains really hard or it's very windy or things like that. So the third sister that we plant around those two is the squash. And so what the squash will do, the squash plants will crawl out throughout the garden and create a leaf or foliage cover to prevent weeds from popping up so that those three sisters working together can provide a lot of nutrients for each other and be able to soak up the water that they need.
Mm.
And each individual plant provides through its roots. For example, the beans provide the nitrate that the corn needs in order to grow. So that's the kind of symbiotic relationship I'm talking about. But on a spiritual level, our bodies also need to eat those three foods in together in unison. So each one of those foods provides a different aspect of nutrients that your body needs. And by eating those three together, then your body is in wellness because you have all of the vitamins that you need.
Mm, that is so beautiful. That is so beautiful. Thank you for explaining that, Angela. And again, my guest is Angela Ferguson. And Angela is a traditional indigenous farmer from the Haudenosaunee Nation and is a part of the Onondaga Nation farm crew and travels all over the country. And I'm not sure if you travel to Europe, but I wouldn't be surprised to help to bring this information across the globe, as we really need to understand. I'm certainly, as you share so beautifully, you know, our the sacredness of Mother Earth, the sacredness of Mother Life, and all of the gifts that she has given to us. So do you travel to Europe as well? Because I do know that there's many seed temples or seed vaults across the globe that are trying to help to protect and preserve the integrity of the seeds for the future.
I haven't traveled outside of Turtle Island, no, but I have traveled all over here in the United States as well to communicate with a lot of other elders who, for us, is our encyclopedia, our wealth of knowledge that we can tap into. And I think there's been a lot of research in people who are really thirsty and wanting to know this knowledge. And me, myself, personally, that's where I go to for all of my information. I go to all the different elders throughout Turtle Island who have been waiting for someone to ask. And that's what a lot of them will tell me. And by sitting and visiting and listening, that's how I've been getting a lot of information, new information. It's old information, but it becomes new to me when I hear it for the first time. And then as a younger person that's out traveling, I'm able to share that information and from whom I received that information to tell them who that person was and where they were and what nation they had come from, what experience they had. So it creates this invisible network of all these ties to all the communities, the indigenous communities across North America.
That is so beautiful. Thank you for doing that, Angela. And when you're planting and you have the three sisters together, and once you've done the harvesting, and can you help us to understand how are you then, what percentage of the seeds, et cetera, do you then keep in storage so that you have it for the future? And how are you helping people understand how to look to the future for the sustenance that we need without going through everything all at once, which obviously would be futile?
Right. Well, it was difficult in the beginning when we first started out our work crew, because For example, a woman had given me 18 beans, and they were just enough to fit in the palm of my hand. And I had showed them to my council of chiefs on the Onondaga Nation one day, and I said, look at these seeds, they're so beautiful. And they were a long-lost variety of a Haudenosaunee bean that we were really supposed to be eating. And after colonization, some of our foods got displaced, just like people did, and that seed made its way back to us. So I was really excited to show them. And I said, you know, they said, well, what are you going to do with them? And I said, I'm going to feed the whole Iroquois Confederacy with this handful of beans. Mm-hmm. And we held an event last August where we were able to serve all of those beans to people. And all of a sudden I had the memory that I took those 18 beans and I said that, and I thought, here we are, we're feeding the people. But it took a couple of years to get them going. Mm-hmm. And many other people besides myself growing them out as well. So the key to building those things up is sharing.
Yes.
Sharing them so that they're not all in one place and not the duty doesn't fall onto one person.
Right. And I understand, and correct me if I'm wrong, but I heard a beautiful story once from one of the seed keepers at the seed temple that within each seed, within each kernel holds like archaeology, if I could use that term, our history, our DNA, because it is through the sustenance of these beautiful corn kernels that our DNA is interacting with the DNA of this, and there's like a shared silent history, if you will.
Yes, a lot of times when people eat the food, it triggers what they call ancestral memory.
Mm.
So when you feed your body a food that your ancestors had eaten on the regular, and you haven't been exposed to that at all in your whole entire life, the first time that you eat that, sometimes people have very intense experiences. Sometimes they'll have dreams, or all of a sudden they'll have the desire to start growing food. And that's pretty amazing when that happens, because it starts as small steps. And then through eating that food, you do develop this invisible relationship, crossing a boundary between you and your ancestors and that food. And that food's own ancestors.
Oh my gosh.
So a lot of those foods are much easier for our bodies to digest, but it also changes you.
Angela, that makes so much sense, because as we're talking about our DNA strand mostly being closed, as we begin to reactivate that part of our DNA that was nourished for century upon century by these beautiful foods and medicines, that it's like a key unlocking a door to help,
yeah,
helping to remind our bodies, this is who you are and this is where you came from.
And it also, it doesn't only apply to Indigenous people here in North America. That applies to everyone everywhere.
Yes.
And one of my friends who recently passed, he had said to me that everyone is Indigenous to somewhere.
That's right.
And if everyone who has immigrated over here to North America at least made a trip once back to the homeland of where their ancestors had come from, so that their feet could be standing on the ground where their ancestors came from, and they had the opportunity to eat the foods that grow where they come from, then there would be a better understanding between what people would say is us and them about how the Indigenous people of North America feel.
Yes, I personally had that experience when I went to Ireland, because half of my ancestry is from Ireland. And for me, it was not only the food, it was the aromas, the smells, the smell of the sea, the smell of the dew on the grass, all of it. It is like a visceral memory.
Right.
That's so beautiful. Thank you so much for sharing that. So can you tell us also, Angela, again, my guest is Angela Ferguson, and I want to let you know, all my listeners, that there is a beautiful PBS special that's going to begin airing on October 23rd, 2018, from 9 to 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And it is a beautiful series of four episodes called Native America. I would strongly recommend that you go to your local PBS station or affiliate and find out when exactly it's airing in your location. But on October 23rd is the first one is called Caves to Cosmos. The second, in which Angela Ferguson, my guest right now, is going to be aired, is featured in this particular episode running October 30th called Nature to Nations. And then the third and fourth will run on November 13th at 9 and 10, respectively, Cities of the Sky and New World Rising. It must have been extraordinary and wonderful for you to be able to be a part of this documentary series, Angela.
Yes, it really was. You know, usually people are a little bit nervous about being filmed and kind of allowing people into a bit of their personal lives and their nations. And I'm so thankful and I feel blessed that we did agree and also have the consent to participate, because I feel that the food, it just kind of has taken over. It's taken over our whole Iroquois Confederacy, and I feel like it's at the basis of our strength. And so I feel like it had this voice that wanted to be shared with the world. And I was able to watch the film myself, and originally they had told us, you know, oh, well, it might be a 2-minute part, a little, you know, kind of a blip on the radar, but it takes a lot of hours of filming just to get one of those little tidbits of video.
Yeah.
So it wasn't really what we expected or what the filmmaker had expected. He expressed that to me.
Wonderful.
Because they wanted to show the world the importance of our wampum and how our peacemaker and the great law of peace had contributed to the basis of democracy for the United States.
Yes.
The basis of the creation of the Constitution.
Angela, we need to take a real quick break. And when we come back, let's talk about that, about the wampum, the Iroquois Confederacy, the Haudenosaunee's part in all of that. If you please stay with me, we need to take a real quick break. Again, this is Elaine Grohman for Empower Radio, Going Beyond Medicine. And stay with me as we continue our conversation with Angela Ferguson.
Meditation channel, non-stop meditation music 24 hours a day in the new Empower Radio app. Music to empower your meditation, help you relax, sleep, or provide a calm background while you work. The Empower Meditation channel is interruption free. Listen now with the Empower Radio app, free in the App Store, or listen online at empower.fm. Soothe your soul, calm your mind. The Empower Meditation channel.
I don't believe it. My savings are gone. They're gone.
You're kidding.
Nope, they're gone. They're gone, gone.
Okay, all right. Think about it. Where did you have them last?
I remember I was home, then I took them, and then I spent them on that vacation to Aruba. Then I bought this miniature suit of armor I saw in the in-flight magazine.
And that's the last you saw of your savings?
Yes.
This is so weird.
I know, right?
Weird? Not really. Not saving now means no money later. You'd be surprised how quickly a little money from every paycheck can really add up. Put away a few bucks, feel like $1 million. For free ideas and easy ways to save, go to feedthepig.org. That's feedthepig.org.
The armor is cool, though. Oops. I think I broke its gauntlet.
You broke my favorite part!
This message brought to you by the American Institute of Certified Public Accountants and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to The Dog Show. Up next, we have Satchmo. Satchmo is a member of the Shelter Pet Group.
That's right, a group known especially for their couch-snuggling, ball-chasing, face-licking, tail-wagging, backyard-hanging, and, of course, companionship. And what breed would you say Satchmo is?
I'd have to go with maybe a Labish Terrier Hound Chihuahua looking kind of mix.
Tremendous dog.
I'd also like to point out Satchmo's coloring, a white, gray, brown, black brindle, simply marvelous.
You know, it's such a treat to watch a dog like this.
Now, let's see him in action.
Look how he makes eye contact with his person.
That's actually known as the treat stare.
How intuitive. And now he appears to be excitedly turning in circles.
Ah, the happy dance, so common with this group.
And finally, the loving face lick.
It's great how he just gets in there and, well, licks.
Fantastic. But really, the best way to know an amazing shelter pet like Satchmo is to meet one.
Visit theshelterpetproject.org today. Adopt.
Brought to you by Maddie's Fund, the Humane Society of the United States, and the Ad Council.
When I have an asthma attack, I feel scared. It's kind of like an elephant is on my chest.
I feel like I'm choking.
Sometimes my parents have to take me to the hospital.
You know how to react to their asthma attacks. Here's how to prevent them. Visit www.noattacks.org or call your doctor. Because even one attack is one too many.
I feel like a fish with no water.
Brought to you by the EPA and the Ad Council.
Positively uplifting. This is Empower Radio.
Now back to Elaine Groman and Going Beyond Medicine on Empower Radio.
EmpowerRadio.com.
Welcome back to the show, everyone. And today my guest is Angela Ferguson, who is a traditional indigenous farmer, and she oversees the Onondaga Nation farm crew and is responsible for all of their community gardens, but is also travels across Turtle Island, the United States of America, to help to bring back the beautiful stories and varieties of corn and other foods so that we can really begin to eat well. But at the beginning or the end of the first section, we were speaking about the Haudenosaunee and the Iroquois Confederacy. Could you explain more about that, please, Angela?
So in the film Nature to Nation, they had wanted to exhibit to the world how our message from the peacemaker, which had originally set up the Iroquois Confederacy or the Haudenosaunee people, which was the great law of peace. And that message is so much to explain, but what it did was unified their original five nations, which were the Seneca, Cayuga, Onondaga, Oneida, and Mohawk. And in the 1700s, the Tuscarora people returned and became the sixth nation of the Confederacy. So through that message of the Great Law of Peace were the instructions of how we were to conduct ourselves from that point forward. And the basis of that was used as a kind of a role model for the Constitution of the United States.
Yes.
So they wanted to portray that to the world. And one of those aspects that they wanted to talk about was the food and some of the traditional activities of the Haudenosaunee people. But what the filmmaker didn't realize was what a huge part food played in our culture and how it was the actual basis of our strength from the beginning all the way till now. And one of the main aspects of our sovereignty and the sovereignty of all human beings is the question, can you feed yourself? And so, yes, we could. And I think that was one of the surprising things that the filmmaker discovered was how many people still are doing that activity of growing their traditional food, utilizing them in ceremonies, utilizing them in their diet, and sharing the seeds and keeping the seeds for the future generations. So it kind of opened the window where the food and the female people, the females of the Iroquois Confederacy who lie at the basis of our culture, were the heart and soul of all of that. So it was interesting to watch the dynamic.
Okay, thank you for that. And the Haudenosaunee Nation is in Syracuse, New York, is that correct?
The Onondaga Nation is?
Onondaga yes. Nation.
Correct. And the other nations, we're all spread out across from an east to west axis across New York State. We also have some of our people in northern Canada and just above Lake Ontario and Six Nations, Canada. And there's also Iroquois people in Oklahoma. So we're spread out.
That's wonderful. As people across the globe are, I mean, no one is really, as very few people that are truly indigenous to their own area. We're people from all over the world. You know, it's very unusual for, except for in the native peoples, to have really the consistency often of their bloodline being so clean, if you understand what I mean.
Yeah.
You know, and that's beautiful. I read a reference that you had said that corn is my life. Can you help us understand why you carry seeds with you and how that is truly a sacred and beautiful thing so that we can begin to understand the importance of all of that?
Well, my own personal relationship, everyone that knows me knows that, corn is my life because from morning till night, sometimes even well into the night, I'm either talking about or doing something with seeds or anything that I'm doing is revolving around that. And my life wasn't always that way. It's just kind of like I feel like it called me and I created this relationship with it, you know, that I listen and I made a lot of changes in my own life, and I feel like the people who I work with, you know, these projects are never a one-person show. It's all about, that's why we're called a farm crew, because not one person is doing all of the work. It takes a coalition of people putting forth all of their good minds and their good efforts to work together to make a garden successful. Mm-hmm. And so I like people to know that it's not just about me and my work, but truly each and every individual that works with us has the same love for the gardens and the food and the seeds and also cooking the food. So when I say that, it means that I finally have gotten to a point in my life where I've realized like how important that really is, not only for me, but for me to pass down to my grandchildren, my daughter, and they've all taken an interest too. So you know that it's going to live on if you can make sure to trigger that excitement, you know, in your own family, your own community.
Yes. And as you're saying that, Angela, you know, it makes so much sense because certainly no one person can take care of a garden themselves. But as many people are working the land together, it's literally building and solidifying and strengthening their community. Not only their physical body from the benefit of eating the food, but their relationships and their understanding of one another. And then being mindful and aware of the needs and the wants of every people at different times in their life, from the littlest to the oldest, from the strongest to the weakest or the eldest to the youngest, whatever. You know, it builds this beautiful web of community and strength that we need to reestablish globally.
Right. And, you know, part of it is not only just the agriculture, but food is so important. We have five members on our crew also, the men who do all the hunting and fishing. And so to include with all of the things that we're growing in the garden, when we make these deliveries to the homes, they're also receiving the wild game, the venison, the wild turkeys, the fish, things that the men forage from the woods and bring back. Mm. So it's covering the whole circle of the food cycle.
That is so beautiful. And as you say, you know, it's so important to begin to teach the children this from such a very early age. And we, especially in the white world, if I could use that term, you know, we're so unfortunately have been distanced from the reality of our food. From the reality of, you know, food is not a bunch of chemicals that you can't read on the back of the package, you know, and to really have a different sense, as you said, of experiencing working with these beautiful gifts from Mother Earth, but also then to have them sustain our lives and what a difference it makes for our health and our mind and our spirit and our body.
Right. One of the things I like to really impress into people's minds is that every single seed was given a duty. And mm-hmm. when those seeds are put into the ground and given allowed to complete their duty, which is grow to fruit, provide that food, and feed the people. That's their duty. It creates a balance in your own life because you're one of the co-creators of that by nurturing it, which is your duty. Mm-hmm. So part of that is the reward when I'm sure many of your listeners today that have their own gardens know what I'm speaking about, with that reward of eating your own tomatoes out of your own garden, eating corn on the cob that you grew yourself, things like that. It's a completely different experience to eat those foods than it is to go purchase those foods. Mm-hmm. Or even if you aren't able to grow your own food directly, to purchase those foods from organic non-GMO farmers who did do that, who did put that love and that care into it, the food always tastes better. There's not a person that you could ask that would say it doesn't.
That's right. And that's so
that's
true.
Commercially grown. Mm-hmm.
And you know, even though I'm going to share a little story, it has nothing to do with corn, but you know, I'm kind of known for my cookies. And people always say, well, how come my cookies don't taste like yours, even though I'm following the recipe? And I say, do you pray? Do you pray when you're making them? Because that's what I do. I pray with love that whoever is eating this feels the love that I am putting into it. And it's so palpable. I mean, it's so real. But
it is. Yeah.
And that's so beautiful. We have to begin to understand that. So going forward, Angela, how do you see that we can begin to share this beautiful knowledge that you have and that the other farmers that are working with you are so diligently making sure is a part of our global culture? What can we do as individuals to try to begin to reconnect with our land and to do things in a way that really supports the health of the soil and the land in which we live?
Well, part of this movement about food is our medicine, and talking about all of these different foods, we do have to remember that the earth itself, too, needs balance. And so by planting these gardens, a lot of times you're able to restore that. You can't just keep planting in the same spot over and over and over again without, you know, because you're taking nutrients from the soil and you're utilizing that spot. But there's things that need to be put back in. So you need to be aware and present that you can't just continue doing that over and over and expect the earth to just keep producing without putting something back. So I like to encourage people to rotate places where they plant, maybe have this spot for a little while and then move it over here and then maybe grow some things that can replenish the nutrients in the other spot. There's a lot of cover crops that can be planted, and getting to know your own area, because what we do up in New York is not the same thing that people would do in New Mexico or Minnesota or Florida. You know, you have to get to know your own area.
Right.
So that creates a different way of communicating with other farmers. And I would love to just see more people getting back to organic farming, because a lot of people will say, it is organic farming. And it's just a word to a lot of people, and they know that, oh, well, organic is better than commercial. But really what organic farming is the no use of pesticides.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you have to also be aware that organic does not always mean that the vegetable or fruit is non-GMO. So you have to make sure when you're buying food that's labeled that it says non-GMO and organic.
Yes.
You want to have something that's heirloom. For people out there who don't know what that means, you're talking about something that has been grown for four generations, 100 years or more, and has been unaltered in any way by any scientific method, and has just been grown traditionally in the manner that it was intended.
Angela, on your website, Braiding the Sacred, will you be having, I'm looking at it now, will you be having any kind of basic understanding? So people, let's say somebody in the middle of maybe in an urban setting that doesn't have a lot of land, but maybe could do like container gardens or something of that nature, that they could begin to understand, you know, in different zones, climate zones or different things? What could be a beginning basis for them? Are you going to be sharing any of that kind of information on your website, do you suspect?
Well, we are looking to expand that and build on that a little bit in 2019.
Good.
So hopefully there will be a little more places to have a message board and a little more communication. It's just that a lot of us that organize Great in the Sacred are quite busy because we all have jobs in agriculture.
Yeah, I imagine.
So we're trying to recruit.
So you need a team behind you, right?
Yeah, to assist us a little bit because it's overwhelming sometimes.
Sure.
But, we always are looking to share information, and I try to tell people, a lot of people are afraid to garden because they think, oh, I can't manage a big thing like that, but you don't have to do a big thing. A lot of food can come out of a 4x10 raised bed garden.
Oh, it's
enough,
astonishing.
Enough food to feed a family of four.
Yeah, it's astonishing how small it can be and have such bounty from it.
Right, yeah.
And then if you preserve it well, you have it throughout the cold winter. Certainly you guys in New York have dargone cold winters like we do in Michigan.
Yeah, my father planted like 60 plants one year of summer squash and zucchini. And I was like, why did you plant so many? And he goes, well, it's only 60. And I said,
oh my gosh,
60 is a lot. I said, wow. And I mean, everybody on the whole nation was eating zucchini and squash. And when they seen him coming, they were like, oh no, he's going to bring more. So it's just so funny, you know?
That's funny.
Don't plant so many.
Oh gosh. But you know, it's a learning, isn't it? It's a learning that, you know, there is actually much more, that this one little seed can do so much beyond what our expectation is, and when to learn balance, I guess, is what it would be. So are you traveling now, Angela? Again, my guest is Angela Ferguson of the Onondaga Nation Farm Crew outside of Iraq. Are you living in the Syracuse, New York area?
Yes. Okay. I am currently. I just took a trip out to the Seed Temple, Florida Miles Seed Temple, and I'm overwhelmed.
Isn't it beautiful?
I haven't even had the time to absorb everything I saw and learned there, and it was pretty amazing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I've traveled all around previous to that, talking about the upcoming documentary as well, because one of the main questions was, well, what is so different about this Native documentary, you know, compared to all the others that have been out there? And what I feel is that it really portrays Native people, not from a documentary point of view, but from their own point of view. And it's a very strengthening thing to see. Yes. And after coming from Florida Miles and doing both of those events, I realized, like, it's just a never-ending process of learning and connecting. And every time I go to a place like that, you don't know what to expect, but I've just left there so spiritually recharged.
Yes.
I'm really just blown away by everything I saw there.
I know. She's just an extraordinary human being.
She sure is.
And you know what is so beautiful is that all of this is coming together now so seamlessly. It seems like Spirit is really saying, it's time. It's time for all of humanity.
Yeah, there's an invisible force that is creating this network of people and these friends that it's drawing, you know, a lot of times the world is so negative and some people just get up in the morning dreading the day. And yet there's all these people all around the world, not just over here, but I mean everywhere.
Oh, I know.
And it's like all of a sudden there's this invisible force that's pulling all of these people and somehow connecting all of their dots and making that reach out to others.
Yes.
You know, to bring them into that positive loop.
Yes.
And, I'm so thankful that I was able to be invited and be allowed to visit her place.
Well, I remember during the gathering that we had in May at the Seed Temple that it was just so beautiful because there was this whole beautiful display, and then I had the opportunity to go down into the, I guess you would call it a vault or the protected temperature-controlled room where these beautiful seeds are. And we need them everywhere. We need these beautiful temples everywhere, you know, because what we need to do is reestablish our immediate connection to the living earth and really begin to understand that she is what supplies our life, every itty bitty part of it. There's right. nothing that doesn't come from Mother Earth, from our air to our water to our seeds to our clothing to our people.
Right.
And it's so beautiful. So tell us if there's any upcoming gatherings, or is there ways that you would prefer people to get in touch with you, Angela?
Well, we do have our website, which has an email address on there.
Okay. And that is braidingthesacred.org for those who are
correct.
Listening. www.braidingthesacred.org. And just looking at these beautiful photographs is just makes you feel peaceful. It does me anyways.
Yeah, they're very beautiful. And when we host a Braiding the Sacred gathering, it's really funny because the corn takes over. We started out with our main focus on corn just to get the conversation started of reconnecting a lot of Indigenous farmers. And the original intent of the group was to make a connection between the youth and the elders because we're the bridge in between. And so that was the original goal, was to find all this traditional farming information. And it has just really expanded so quickly, so fast. Literally, corn growers are coming out of the woodwork and literally out of the wood to tell us these things and show us their seeds and to share with us. So everyone is growing all the foods now, and it's just wonderful.
Well, I hope that you would consider coming to Michigan, because I would love to have you here. And
we've been to the food summits there at Gun Lake, Michigan. But
have you? Okay.
We haven't had a Braiding the Sacred gathering there yet. We just had our last one at the Ho-Chunk Nation of Wisconsin. Mm-hmm. And that was a very, very fantastic event. It was
beautiful.
One of the biggest ones we had.
So Angela, again, my guest is Angela Ferguson. Angela, are you working with different universities or different people that are involved in agriculture to help them begin to understand the importance of the resurgence of truly, truly organic and pure ways of growing food?
Yes, I work a lot with my cousin works at the School of Environmental Science and Forestry for SUNY. And that's right near Syracuse University. I've done different events and discussion topics at Syracuse University, Cornell University, Colgate University, different places around Syracuse. Mm-hmm. And my time is kind of limited, so that's about as far as I could get. But traveled to different nations in our Confederacy also to talk to the kids and to bring the seeds, because I want them to handle them, you know, to be able to touch them, hold them, and pass them around.
Mm. That would be so beautiful. There's people I can think of that are trying to help children understand organic gardening. My daughter
right.
in particular right now, who lives in the South, but she, you know, has this organic gardening club for children to just get their hands in the dirt to begin mm-hmm. to understand how do you do this. So what you're doing is so important. And as we know, for this next seven generations and beyond, we have to change what we're doing so that this beautiful earth can thrive and we can thrive along with her.
Yes. Mm-hmm. The children are the key, because we just did a corn husking bee, which is where you bring all of the corn after it's picked to open all of the, you husk and open all of the husks. And then we take those husks that are on the end and we braid them together.
Mm.
So when everyone does it together, that's why they call it a husking bee. And we took corn down to the children at the nation school. And then they are allowed to pick five cobs of their own and braid. And we teach them how to braid it together. And it was really amazing. The picture in my mind that I saw when they were all leaving the school that day, every child had a braid of corn on one arm and a backpack on the other.
Oh, how beautiful.
And I was like, isn't that great? Look at that. Every single child had one. And I was like, that's how everyone should be.
Yes. Well, Angela.
And they were so happy.
Angela, I really want to thank you for what you're doing for our food, for ourselves, to educate everyone else about, I want to learn. Again, my guest has been Angela Ferguson, and please be sure to take a look at the PBS special that begins October 23rd. It's called Native America. It's a 4-part series, and it's absolutely beautiful. Thank you so much, Angela, for your time and for all that you do. It's been a pleasure to speak to you. So again, my name is Elaine Grohman. This is Going Beyond Medicine on Empower Radio. And please know that each and every one of us can do what our duty, to use the term that Angela has said, to use our duty to help to grow this world, grow ourselves in community and personally, so that we make this world a better place and leave it a better place than when we came. Thank you so much. Have a great day. Talk to you next week.